You're listening to the Menswear podcast, and this is the story of Layla Brennan. On the morning of Friday, March 5th, 1999, a man and a woman walked into Rathfarnham Garda Station. The man approached the desk and told the station orderly on duty that he wanted to speak to a detective. When asked what the nature of his inquiry was, the man told the astonished young Garda that he had killed a woman a few days earlier. The man was 26-year-old Philip Colgan, and the woman accompanying him was his wife, Mary. They were quickly ushered into a waiting room where they were joined by two detectives. Colgan calmly told officers that he had killed a young woman, describing where he had disposed of the body, the murder weapon, and the victim's clothes. Throughout his statement, his wife sat beside him, encouraging him to tell the truth. It was an unusual situation for Gardaí. Here was Colgan admitting to murder, yet as far as they knew, no crime had been reported. However, they took his claim seriously, and as he spoke to the detectives, a number of Gardaí were directed to the secluded area of woodland in Killiquea, County Dublin, where Colgan was claiming to have disposed of his victim. Less than half an hour later, the officers radioed back to the station to say that they had uncovered the naked body of a woman who appeared to have horrific head injuries. Colgan was arrested and held in Rathfarnham Garda Station as a full murder investigation was launched, and Gardaí found themselves in the peculiar situation where they had a perpetrator and a victim, but they had no idea as to who she was. In his initial statement to Gardaí, Colgan told them that he didn't know the young woman. He said that he had spent the Monday evening with a friend named Stephen McCurdy, drinking in a bar close to Stephen's Green. The pair had been chatting up two women, and when these women left to head to Temple Bar, Colgan and McCurdy followed them. The ladies made their excuses and skipped into Eamon Doran's, where the boyfriend of one of the women was working as a bouncer. Colgan was denied entry, and following a row with McCurdy, the two men went their separate ways, with McCurdy walking home in the rain and Colgan heading back to his car. According to retired Detective Alan Bailey, who documented the case in his book Missing Presumed, Colgan said that he was driving along Dame Street when he spotted a woman walking alone. He stopped to ask her for directions, and she asked him if he was, quote, looking for business. According to Colgan, the woman offered to have sex with him for money, and in a moment of weakness, he'd agreed. She got into his car and they smoked a cigarette as he followed the woman's directions, driving to a laneway beside a rugby pitch in Ballsbridge. The woman took off her clothes, but by this time Colgan claimed that he had changed his mind about having sex with her, fearing the damage it could do to his marriage. He told the young woman that he had changed his mind and offered to drop her back to Nassau Street, but he recounted to officers that on hearing this, the woman had become very aggressive and demanded that he pay her £60. When he refused, she told him that she knew his registration number and that she'd go to the Gardaí and tell them that he had raped her. She then opened the passenger door of the vehicle and attempted to get out, wearing just her bra and underwear. Colgan claimed that this had panicked him and he'd hit her in the face to stun her, before pulling her back into the car. The woman began to scream, and in an attempt to quieten her, Colgan said he'd put his hands around her neck and started to choke her. She struggled with him, striking out and scratching him across the face and hands, but he managed to overpower her. Colgan then removed the woman's bra and wrapped it around her neck, pulling tight until she stopped moving. It was only then, said Colgan, that he realized the enormity of what he had done. He then loaded the body into the boot of his car and drove towards the Dublin Mountains. When he found what he thought was a suitable spot, Colgan said he pulled over into a lay-by and dragged the young woman's body across a patch of gorse until he came to the edge of a steep incline. It was then that he realized that the woman was in fact still breathing. He placed her on the ground and nudged her unconscious body, sending it rolling down the hill. he returned to his car and retrieved his wheel brace, an anti-theft device, before walking down to where the woman now lay at the base of the hill. Colgan used the heavy metal tool to strike the woman a number of times in the head until he was sure that she was dead. He then gathered her clothing and placed it in a bag with the wheel brace. He headed back towards the city, and in a panic, Colgan rang his wife and asked her to come and collect him. When she arrived, she found him in a highly distressed state with his clothes covered in mud. Mary noticed a number of injuries to her husband's face, including some half-moon-shaped indents, and when she asked him about what had happened, he told her that they'd been caused during an altercation with Gardaí earlier in the night. He claimed that the officers had pulled him over and a scuffle ensued, resulting in Gardaí beating Colgan and impounding his car. However, over the next few days, Colgan's erratic behaviour continued, and he refused to leave the couple's home at Cranach Castle, Rathfarnham. Mary begged him to tell her what was wrong and what had really happened in the early hours of the previous Tuesday morning. Finally, he relented, telling her that he had cheated on her with a sex worker and that something bad had happened between them. Eventually, he confessed what he had done to his wife in the hope that she would cover for him and provide him with an alibi. In his book, Alan Bailey wrote, quote, "He was so confident of her infatuation with him and the power that it gave him over her that he decided to come clean." But Mary Colgan had not responded in the way that her husband had anticipated. Absolutely repulsed by what he had told her, Mary insisted that Colgan contact Gardaí and confess. As a man who was apparently used to manipulating women to get his own way, Philip Colgan was taken completely by surprise by his wife's refusal to lie for him. Instead, she insisted that he write down what happened in order to get the story out of his head. After some coaxing, Colgan agreed, and he dictated his account of what had happened to Mary, who wrote it down. He spent the rest of the evening mulling over his options before giving in and going to the Garda station, accompanied by Mary, the following morning. In an attempt to identify the body, investigators set about trawling recent reports of missing women, but this brought them no leads. Eventually, a detailed description of the woman was released to the media and was broadcast on television and radio news bulletins, as well as being printed in newspaper reports. It said the woman was 5'5" tall, approximately 10 stone with dyed brown hair. Of note, she was said to have a small scar under her chin and small blue dots tattooed on the knuckles of her right hand. When Richard Brennan heard the television appeal, he immediately felt a sense of unease. The description of the woman matched his 24-year-old daughter, Layla, who he hadn't heard from in a number of days. Originally from Clondalkin, Layla had worked as a receptionist in a dental practice in the Liberties after finishing school. However, she fell in with a bad crowd, and after becoming addicted to heroin, Layla lost her job and ended up turning to sex work to make ends meet. By early 1999, she was living with friends in the city centre, and to her family, she appeared to have overcome her addiction. Nonetheless, her father was so disturbed by the description of the body that Gardaí had found in the Dublin mountains that he drove to Rathfarnham Garda station to speak to the investigators. Richard Brennan was taken to the city morgue, where he identified the young woman's body as his daughter, Layla. After a number of initial interviews, Gardaí formally charged Philip Colgan on Saturday, March the 6th, the day after he presented himself at Rathfarnham Garda station. In answer to the charge, Colgan replied, quote, "I have made full statements." Colgan appeared in Dublin District Court wearing an Aran sweater and jeans, and when asked by Judge Desmond Windle if he was working, Colgan shook his head. When asked if he had been working the previous week, Colgan replied that he had been, quote, "selling clothes." He was granted free legal aid and remanded in custody. Meanwhile, officers conducted thorough searches of the area at Kilkee where Layla had been found. They also examined Philip Colgan's home, and in a bin close to his house, Gardaí uncovered a stashed bag containing a number of items of clothing stained with blood, along with a wheel brace which was also covered in blood. These items were taken along with Colgan's car for forensic testing. Philip Colgan was no stranger to trouble. In November of 1991, at the age of just 18, He broke into an apartment at an elderly sheltered living facility near his home in Donaghmede, following a binge of ecstasy and alcohol. The 79-year-old widowed occupant woke at 2 a.m. to find Colgan lying on top of her with a knife to her throat. He told her that if she screamed, he would kill her. The woman, who suffered from asthma, began to wheeze, and she begged Colgan for access to her inhaler, but he refused. He raped her before tying her up with the straps of her handbag and subjecting her to further sexual degradation. Before he left, he stole £120 from the woman and told her that he would ring Gardaí to come and release her, but he failed to do so. Thankfully, she managed to raise the alarm with neighbours by banging her head on the wall beside her bed. Just 2 days after this attack, Colgan, who was working as a chef at the time, struck again. This time, his victim was a 32-year-old Spanish woman who he met at McGonagall's nightclub on South Ann Street in the city centre. The woman had travelled to Dublin to undergo hospital treatment for a serious illness, and after meeting Colgan on a night out, she agreed to go back to his home, where he said a party was taking place. When they got there, the woman realised that the apartment was empty, and Colgan forced her into his bedroom, where he began to sexually assault her. Chillingly, as the attack was taking place, Gardaí knocked on Colgan's door to ask him to turn down the loud music he was playing, but unfortunately, the woman was unable to draw their attention. Eventually, she made her escape, and officers who were searching nearby in relation to the first attack later arrested Colgan. Philip Colgan was sentenced to 8 years for the rape of the elderly woman, along with a concurrent sentence of 6 years for the attack on the Spanish woman. Justice Paul Carney said at the time that he was adopting a, quote, relatively lenient approach on the basis of Colgan's young age, his lack of previous convictions, and his willingness to plead guilty and spare his victims the trauma of giving evidence. While serving his sentences for these crimes in Wheatfield Prison, Colgan attended counselling sessions as part of the Sex Offenders Rehabilitation Programme, where he crossed paths with an older psychologist named Mary Gaffney. The two formed a close bond, and it would later become clear that Colgan had used a mixture of charm and manipulation to convince Mary that he had been rehabilitated. Because of this, he was given normal remission on his 8-year sentence, and when he left the prison in 1998 after serving just 6 years for aggravated rape and sexual assault, Mary Gaffney was waiting for him. Following a whirlwind romance, the pair married in September of that year. They settled in the Crannacastle estate, and despite their age gap, the couple appeared to be happy and content. Unaware of Colgan's murky past, neighbours held him in high regard, saying that he was popular and good company. Colgan's murder of Layla Brennan occurred less than a year after his release from prison, and just 6 months after his wedding day. After the discovery of Layla's body, a post-mortem was performed by Deputy State Pathologist Dr. Mary Cassidy, who concluded that the young woman had died from strangulation. In addition, the pathologist observed bruising to the vaginal area, indicating that there had been attempted forced penetration. This cast doubt on Colgan's account to Gardaí, in which he claimed that he didn't have any sexual contact with Layla. Dr. Cassidy found that Layla's torso and legs were covered in scratches and scrapes, which she surmised was caused by the body being dragged through the brambles and foliage. Also of note was the fact that Layla had suffered from hypothermia prior to her death, but she had ultimately died from lack of oxygen caused by manual and ligature strangulation. The woman also had bruising consistent with having received a blow to the mouth, and there was an incline in her skull which was determined to have been the result of blunt force trauma. Layla had been found with her bra knotted tightly around her neck. Her body was naked except for a shoe and a sock. The clothing that had been discovered in the bag near Philip Colgan's home was confirmed to have belonged to the young woman. In another contradiction to Colgan's statement, these items were spattered with blood, indicating that she had been dressed when she was assaulted with the wheel brace before being stripped after her death. Forensic testing of Colgan's car revealed both hair and blood samples that were identified as having belonged to Layla, with much of the blood being found in the back seat. This supported the story that he had given to Gardaí in his initial statements. Leila Brennan was laid to rest on Wednesday, March 10th, 1999. Journalist Yvonne Kinsella, reporting for The Echo, wrote that hundreds of people packed into St. Peter the Apostle's Church at Neilstown to pay their final respects to the young woman. Her heartbroken parents were comforted by neighbours and friends as they sat at the top of the church with their other daughter and son. Layla's boyfriend was also in attendance. In his eulogy, Father Jerry Dempsey described Leila as a beautiful, caring and generous young woman who had a large circle of friends. Her coffin was covered with floral tributes and a striking photo of Leila was placed among the bouquets, her candid expression staring out into the congregation. Mourners wept openly as Leila's favourite Eric Clapton songs, Tears in Heaven and Leila, echoed through the church. Following the emotionally charged service, Leila Brennan was laid to rest in Palmerstown Cemetery. In the weeks after her funeral, Leila's parents, who both worked with young people in the local area, released a statement thanking the community for their support following their daughter's death. They wrote that the flowers, good wishes and prayers of locals had been a huge comfort for them as they struggled to come to terms with the loss of Leila. Following Colgan's arrest, he was detained at the Central Mental Hospital before being returned to Mountjoy, where he was held on remand. Here, his story about the events of the night that Leila had died began to evolve dramatically. During a visit with his wife, Mary, Colgan told her that a Scottish man called Wayne had forced him to kill Leila at knife point. He said that he had initially met Wayne in a gay bar in the city centre on the evening of Leila's death, and the pair had exchanged mobile telephone numbers before engaging in oral sex. Wayne had then suggested that they pick up a woman. Colgan then became confused, telling his wife that this wasn't true, and instead he said he had picked up a homeless person on the street who was present when Leila died. The story changed yet again when Colgan said that both the homeless person and Wayne had taken part in the killing. Then the story reverted back to just Colgan and Wayne being present, with Colgan claiming that he had been driving around Dublin city centre with Wayne when they spotted Leila Brennan walking along Dame Street. Wayne told him to stop the car, saying that Leila owed him money. The plan, said Colgan, was that the pair would both have sex with Leila to cancel the debt owed by her to Wayne. They picked her up and drove to the Belvedere rugby grounds in Balls Bridge, where Colgan said he got out of the car to give Wayne and Leila some privacy. When it started to rain, he had walked a few hundred feet to take shelter under a canopy. He claimed he returned to the car 15 to 30 minutes later and found Wayne distraught and Leila face down in the back seat of the car with her bra tied around her neck. Wayne told him that while having sex, Leila had tried to dip him, meaning she'd attempted to take money out of his pocket. A struggle had ensued and Wayne had ended up killing the young woman. According to Colgan, the two men then panicked and started arguing about what to do with the body. Colgan was afraid that if Leila's body was found, then his homosexual encounter with Wayne could be uncovered, thus ending his marriage. The pair ultimately decided to dispose of Leila's body. They loaded her into the boot, drove to a lay-by in Killachie, and dumped her remains in a ditch. After disposing of the body, Colgan then said he and Wayne had fought violently. He rendered Wayne unconscious and then put him in the boot of his car, driving him further into the mountains. However, this was as much as Colgan would disclose about the mysterious Wayne, and he subsequently refused to say whether or not his accomplice was alive when placed in the boot of the car, or what he did with him when he got further into the mountains. Colgan's murder trial opened on October 24th, 2000, presided over by Mr. Justice Paul Butler. Evidence of his previous rape convictions were not introduced to the jury as they were deemed to be prejudicial. In her opening statement, senior counsel Maureen Clark recounted Colgan's original 8 statements to Gardaí. In the version of events outlined there, the one that the state would argue was the truthful account of what had occurred, Colgan said he had been drinking on the night of March 2nd, and as he set off home, he met Leila Brennan, who had gotten into Colgan's van under the pretext of sex in exchange for money. The court heard about Colgan's claim that Leila had asked him for £60 and Leila's alleged threat that she had his reg plate and would report him for rape if he didn't hand over money. Following this, Colgan began to panic at the thought of going to jail, and he told Layla to shut up. He'd punched her and she began screaming, and he tried to strangle her to quiet the young woman down. Ms. Clark stated, quote, he knocked her out to stun her, and then he drove her to the Dublin mountains and put her in the ditch. The prosecution told the jury that they would hear from the pathologist that Layla's neck had marks consistent with strangulation, and that the bra wrapped around her neck was, quote, pulled so tight that the wire went into her neck. Colgan's wife, Mary, who had since separated from him, gave evidence to the court regarding her husband's admissions to her in the days following Layla's murder. Her account was reported by Suzanne McManus, who covered the case extensively for the Irish Examiner. Mary recalled that she had received a late-night phone call from Colgan at 2:20 a.m. on March the 2nd, and how distressed Colgan sounded as he asked her to come and collect him from St. Anne's Park in Raheny. When she arrived, Mary said that her husband was covered in mud and was in a, quote, animalistic state. She told the court, quote, I'll remember that look till my dying day. He had the fear of God in him. His eyes were wild, absolutely terrified. Colgan initially told his wife that he had been beaten up by Gardaí, but Mary recounted his erratic behaviour in the following days and how she had pressed him to tell her the truth. Eventually, she said, her husband had admitted meeting a sex worker on the Monday evening. Quote, he said he had been with a woman and had something terrible to tell me and didn't know how he was going to find the words to tell me. After more coaxing from Mary, Colgan gave her more information. Mary detailed the account that her husband gave her, recounting that Layla had begun to undress and asked for money. When she'd tried to get out of the car, Colgan said he'd pulled her back and that he was afraid of any allegations the other woman might make. Mary then said her husband admitted to her that he'd hit Layla Brennan and that, quote, on the second hit, she'd conked out. According to the witness, Colgan told her he tried to revive the young woman, but when she woke up, she became argumentative. The accused had told her that the young woman had started screaming very loudly, and Colgan wanted to silence her. Asked by Maureen Clark if her husband admitted then that he had strangled Layla, Ms. Colgan replied, yes. Mary said that Colgan had gone on to explain that he had put Layla's body in the boot of the car, drove up the Dublin mountains, and put her body into a ditch. After hearing this shocking admission, Mary Colgan said she had instructed her husband to write down what he had just told her in order to get it out of his head, and she alleged that he had complied, dictating his account to her. In part, the account read, quote, I hit her the second time and knocked her out. When she woke up, she was screaming. I couldn't stop her. I grabbed her by the throat and squeezed until she stopped moving. I put her in the boot of the car and drove to the Dublin Mountains. After this, Mrs. Colgan told the court that after their visit to the Garda station, her husband was first brought to the Central Mental Hospital and then sent to Mountjoy. While visiting him there, Mary recalled that his story began to change and that although Philip Colgan was still admitting to killing Layla, he was now saying that he did it under threat from a man he had met earlier in the night. In this version, Colgan told Mary about meeting a Scottish man called Wayne and that the two of them had picked Layla up. Mary recounted how the story later changed again when Colgan told her that a, quote, tramp he had picked up in the streets was present, and in yet another account he told her that both Wayne and the vagrant had been there. The stories became more erratic and wild, with Colgan even confessing that he had, quote, murdered the tramp and hidden his body. Mary said that her husband had later retracted this story and refused to discuss it any further with her. Next, Deputy State Pathologist Mary Cassidy gave evidence, telling the court that Layla Brennan had been found in a wooded area, mostly naked except for a shoe and a sock. Her bra was tightly wound around her neck and her body was covered in scratches from being dragged through the undergrowth. Though Layla had become hypothermic before she died, Dr. Cassidy said that ultimately her cause of death was both manual and ligature strangulation. Fingernail scratches had been observed on Layla's face and neck, which the pathologist testified may have been caused by the young woman trying to remove a hand that had been placed around her neck and mouth. Bruising around the mouth was also evident, which supported Philip Colgan's account of punching Layla twice. In addition to these wounds, Dr. Cassidy described an injury to Layla's skull, which she said was a result of blunt force trauma, and that this injury was consistent with a wheel brace which was produced in court. This was the same wheel brace that had been uncovered in a bin near Philip Colgan's house, along with some of Layla Brennan's bloodstained clothes. Evidence of Colgan's early statements were then read to the court by Detective Sergeant Cyril Claffey. In his initial interview, when asked if he had meant to kill Layla Brennan, Colgan had allegedly responded, quote, "No, but once I hit her, I knew I had to kill her." When asked why, Colgan had replied by repeating the notion that Layla had identifying information and would go to the guards with false accusations. Officers asked him why he kept squeezing her neck, and according to the statement, Colgan had said he had been afraid of going back to jail. In a second interview, on March 6, 1999, Colgan was alleged to have told Gardaí, quote, "I didn't set out to kill her. I just want her family to know I am sorry, and my family as well." Next, prosecution witness Margot Dukes gave evidence to the court about growling and screeching noises she heard on the night that Layla was killed. Ms. Dukes was working as an overnight home help nurse close to Belvedere rugby grounds, and in the early hours of March 2nd, 1999, she said she had been alarmed to hear the sounds, which were so loud that she thought they would damage the vocal cords of whoever was making them. Ms. Dukes told the jury that the howls seemed to be coming from two people, either two men or a man and a woman, and she recalled that the ferocity of the noises had frightened her. On Friday, October 27th, Philip Colgan took the stand in his own defence and gave an even more convoluted version of events to the court. He told the jury that he had been driving around on the night of the killing with a man named Wayne when they spotted Layla Brennan walking along Dame Street. Wayne asked him to stop the car and Layla got in. They drove towards Donnybrook and Colgan said, quote, "There was an understanding between us because she owed him money. I asked him, did she owe enough for both of us so that we'd both be able to have sex with her? And he said, yeah." Colgan explained that he had parked in the grounds of the rugby club and had gotten out so that Wayne could have sex with Layla. He'd walked to a nearby canopy to take shelter from the rain and claimed that he didn't hear or see anything untoward while he waited. Of course, this contradicted Ms. Duke's earlier evidence of hearing growling and screaming noises within the vicinity of the rugby grounds. Colgan again said that he had returned to the car 15 to 30 minutes later, and there saw Layla face down on the back seat of the car, with her bra wrapped around her neck. Given her appearance at the time, the look on her face, Colgan told the court that he was sure Layla was dead. According to the accused, his companion had then claimed that Layla had tried to steal money from his pocket and that he'd lost control and killed her in anger. Both men began arguing about what they should do. Colgan feared that his wife would leave him if she learned about his sexual encounter with Wayne, which would come out if there was an investigation into Layla's death. Eventually, the men decided that the only way to avoid arrest was to dispose of Layla's body. They loaded her into the boot of Colgan's car and drove out beyond Rathfarnham Village onto the road at Killachie. There, they pulled into a lay-by and removed the body from the boot, dragging it through the thicket before dumping it in a ditch. Colgan claimed that as he walked back to his car, he turned to see Wayne striking Layla's head repeatedly with a wheel brace. Painting himself as the victim in the scenario, Colgan said that he had pulled into that lay-by because he was afraid of going any further into the isolated mountains with Wayne. He asserted that he had been afraid for his own safety. According to the accused, when Wayne arrived back to the car, an altercation broke out between the pair. Colgan said he had grabbed the other man and that, quote, "I felt if I didn't, I was going to end up getting hit with the wheel brace." The two men struggled violently with each other, and Colgan explained to the jury that he had rendered Wayne unconscious before putting him into the boot of his car. Colgan then drove deeper into the mountains. When asked if Wayne was alive when put into the boot of the car, Colgan responded, quote, "I'd rather not answer that." When asked where he went and what he did when he got further into the mountains, Colgan gave the same reply, adding that he left the scene around 15 minutes later. The defendant went on to explain the next actions he had taken that night, telling the jury that earlier in the evening he had spoken with Wayne's brother by phone, arranging to purchase cannabis and ecstasy. Because of this, Colgan had been nervous, as Wayne's brother knew that he, the defendant, had been with Wayne and Layla that night and was expecting to see him when Colgan called to his house. This had made him nervous. In order to cover his tracks, Colgan had phoned Wayne's brother and, quote, told him his brother had killed a woman in the car that night and we both moved her to the mountains. He claimed that he had then gone and picked up Wayne's brother and they travelled to the lay-by where Layla had been removed from the car earlier that night. He'd pointed out where Layla's body had been left and the brother went to inspect the area on his own. Though Colgan said he had not gone with the other man, he said that Wayne's brother had seen Layla's body. Colgan went on to say, quote, he was very distressed for a while and I drove him back. I told him I was going straight to the police and I hadn't a clue where his brother was. When asked why he had contacted Wayne's brother, Colgan asserted that he had been afraid the brother would report Wayne missing, and given he knew Colgan had been with Wayne that night, along with Layla, Gardee would contact him. It would have been easy to figure out that he was the last person to see Wayne alive. Colgan said that he reckoned if Wayne's brother knew that he had been involved in a murder, then he might not report him missing, and no connection could then be made between himself and Layla. Under cross, Maureen Clark for the prosecution asked Colgan why he initially admitted killing Layla to Gardee, before later changing his story to say that another man had committed the crime, whose identity and fate were unknown. Colgan responded, quote, I didn't kill her, Wayne did, and Wayne was never found. It's not my fault that it can't be proved. Ms. Clark put it to him that in his initial statements he had given, quote, an extraordinary description to Gardee about how Layla Brennan had met her death, which had lined up with what Deputy State Pathologist Dr. Mary Cassidy found in her examination. Still, Philip Colgan insisted that his testimony on the stand was what had truly happened. When evidence concluded in the trial, Ms. Clark took to her feet for her closing argument. She told the court that Philip Colgan was a, quote, cold, dispassionate, calculating, and clever liar who had employed a Halloween story to convince the jury otherwise. She said, quote, he has succeeded with his good looks, intelligence, and appearance in duping loads of people. However, Ms. Clark urged the jury to attach enormous importance to the fact that in his first 8 statements to Gardee, Colgan's account of how Layla Brennan died matched the findings of the pathologist's report exactly. Colgan claimed to have hit Layla twice in the mouth. Dr. Cassidy's report tallied with this. Colgan told Gardee he had put his hands over her mouth and grabbed her by the throat, and Dr. Cassidy had found evidence of defensive wounds to back this up. Clark said that Colgan's original statements, quote, must be the truth, because it was a mirror image of Dr. Cassidy's findings. In giving his more convoluted version of events to the court, Colgan had managed to account for how Layla's DNA came to be in his car, while also maintaining his own innocence. He had also managed to paint Layla Brennan in a hugely negative light as a sex worker, addict and thief. In Ireland at this time, juries were required to give a unanimous verdict on murder charges, and all it would take would be for one jury member to be swayed slightly by Colgan's bizarre story to result in a hung jury or acquittal. The jury deliberated for under 3 hours before reaching a unanimous verdict, finding Philip Colgan guilty of the murder of Layla Brennan. Layla's family, who had sat in court throughout the proceedings, listening to the horrific details of her death, wept with relief as the verdict was read out, with one of them calling out, quote, there is a God. Mr. Justice Paul Butler expressed his sympathy to the Brennan family, acknowledging that he realised how upsetting the evidence given in court had been to them. He admitted that he had to fight back tears at one point. Philip Colgan, who sat looking relaxed in an open-necked shirt, showed no emotion as he was automatically sentenced to life imprisonment. When the details of Colgan's past rape convictions emerged, the Brennan family's anguish was amplified. Layla's mother Mary commented, quote, that man should not have been out. He'd already served time for aggravated double rape. There is something wrong that he was out. Mary said that she believed Colgan nearly had the jury convinced that he was innocent, and that she was relieved he was finally behind bars. She added that their family would campaign against any appeals for early release that Colgan made. Quote, Nothing is going to bring her back, but something must be done. There are a lot of people out there who have suffered because of reoffenders. He should never have been out. In time, we are going to campaign about this. Despite the guilty verdict, a number of questions hung over the case. If there was any amount of truth to Colgan's account, then there could, potentially, have been another murder and another body hidden in the Dublin Mountains. Without a surname or any other details, it was impossible to confirm the existence or identity of Wayne. Colgan had refused to say where he allegedly drove Wayne to and whether the man was alive or dead, which was all very convenient to support his own claims of innocence. The prosecution had contended throughout the trial that this more intricate and clever story was a complete fabrication, designed by Colgan to escape the murder charge. However, if he did in fact have an accomplice who he ended up killing, then by refusing to reveal details of the whereabouts of the body, Colgan would have been evading a second murder charge. Without a body or full confession, a murder charge would be almost impossible to pursue. Either way, the jury found that there was enough evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to convict Colgan, and in the end, the story of the second man was never fully elaborated on. Blood samples taken from Colgan's car at the time of his arrest were only ever tested against himself and Layla Brennan. There was a further twist in the story when it emerged that when detectives searched Colgan's house, they found a copy of the Star newspaper featuring a story on the disappearance of six Leinster women. Colgan's wife Mary said that this was very strange as he was a, quote, intellectual snob who only ever bought the Irish Times, though she claimed he rarely actually read it. The copy of the Star had been purchased a few days after Layla Brennan's murder, and when questioned on why he bought the newspaper, Colgan told officers that he had heard the paper contained a picture of the suspect involved in the disappearance of the six Leinster women, and he wanted to see it. Officers looked into any potential link between Colgan and the missing women, and it was found that he had been free from prison when one of the women, 18-year-old Deirdre Jacob, went missing. However, according to retired Detective Alan Bailey, Colgan was never conclusively linked to the disappearance of Deirdre or any other woman. He is still in prison serving out his life sentence while holding on to the truth about what really happened in the early hours of March 2nd, 1999. Layla Brennan ultimately paid the price with her life that night, and whether she met with one man or two will never be known. Thank you for listening to Mens Rea, a true crime podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mens Rea Pod, or you can send an email to mensreapod@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible in part from generous donations by supporters on Patreon. Special thanks to Margaret O'Flaherty, Pamela McLaughlin, Tracy Garner, Caroline O'Neill, and Marianne Elizabeth Johnson. Please do check it out at patreon.com/mensreapod. Our theme music is Quinn's song The Dance Begins by Kevin MacLeod. Additional music is by Juanita Meisel and Kevin MacLeod. This week's episode was researched and written by the amazing Aileen Spearin. Additional writing and production was by me, your host, Sinead. All sources for today's episode can be found in the show notes or on our website, www.mensreapod.com. And so, till next time, don't do anything I wouldn't do.